is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I definitely like to adapt to our players. I'm not a big system guy. I'm a huge concepts teaching guy. I don't like really giving them plays. I like to teach them how to play. That's so important, especially if kids want to go to the next level, right? Because everybody plays differently depending on what school you go to.
Byron Burt is entering his third season as the head boys basketball coach at St. Lawrence High School in Chicago, Illinois. He previously served two seasons as the head coach at his alma mater, Stephen T. Mather High School, before landing the job at St. Lawrence. Byron also worked at Beacon Academy in Chicago as the head boys basketball coach and assistant athletic director from 2017 to 2018. Coach Burt has worked as a coach at the youth level since his playing days and currently helps to oversee Chicago Hoops, the AAU program he started back in 2016. Byron played his high school basketball at St. Lawrence and eventually ended up playing college basketball at Loyola of Chicago for Coach Porter Moser.
Hey, Hoopheads, this October, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $3,000 off their CT machine. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, I'm Dan Krikorian.
And I'm Patrick Carney.
And we're Slapping Glass. And you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Get ready to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Byron Burt, head boys basketball coach at St. Lawrence High School in Chicago, Illinois. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but we are pleased to welcome to the Hoopheads pod Byron Burt, the head boys basketball coach at St. Lawrence High School in Chicago, Illinois. Byron, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Hey, what's up, Mike? Thanks a lot. Appreciate you guys for having me on.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the things that you've been able to do in your coaching career. I want to start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about some of your first experiences with the game of basketball.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think with me, I grew up in Chicago, Rogers Park. I was pretty much involved in a lot of stuff that was like competitive, like the cheerleading, soccer, all type of stuff. So I was really involved in the team aspect of stuff. But I think when I started playing basketball and really looking into it and stuff like that, was probably seventh, eighth grade year. That was a fun year for me. We had an amazing coach, and I think that's kind of like, you know, what sparked everything off.
When you think about that coach and you think about the people that influenced you when you were younger, what are some of the things about that particular coach or some of the other people that you had that influenced you that made them so impactful in your life in terms of how you approached sports and how you looked at basketball?
Yeah, for sure. Like, so 7th, 8th grade, we had Coach Foyer I went to Eugene Elementary School. It's a school in Rogers Park, really small school, not that big. So Coach Foyer basically coached every sport. So he coached like lacrosse, football, basketball. He had us doing wrestling. And I remember he used to like tell us, like, he had this like saying, like, he knew that we all wanted to play basketball, so he had this saying, like, lacrosse gets you football ready gets you wrestling ready gets you basketball ready. And he basically made us all play these sports so we can play basketball, and it worked. did it. But the fact that, like, he just was, like, so involved, man, like, I think he really, like, did a good job of, you know, these are grade school kids. He did a great job building a relationship with us. And it was like, you know, it was more than just the basketball piece of it. You know, he held us accountable for grades. He held us accountable for, like, the, you know, how we dressed, the way we looked, all this other, like, in terms of, like, appropriately, you know what I'm saying? Like, he did a real good job with that. And I think that's what, you know, gravitated all the players towards him. And when I saw that, man, I just saw, like, somebody who actually cared, because I was always in a position where I was always overlooked. You know, nobody really paid attention. You know, I told you I played all these sports, but it was like I was always, like, the guy kind of counted out. And this coach, like, just inspired all of us and gave everybody hope. And he got me started, man. And after that, I got intrigued with coaching, you know, and I started to really love the game of basketball more. And I wanted more.
So when you started thinking about taking basketball more seriously and working on the game and getting better, what did you do, like, as a high school player to improve your game? Were you playing a lot of pickup ball? Were you in the gym by yourself working out? Did you have a friend or a coach that kind of helped you? Just what was your process for getting better?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's so crazy. It's so different right now. Like, when you look at these players now that are like 14, 15 year olds, like, I got a young team right now, St. Lawrence, and I'm looking at some of these guys, they have trainers, you know, like, they got individual trainers, and it's kind of like crazy. We didn't really have that stuff back then. It was kind of like you doing most of the work on your own. So I definitely played a lot. I did a lot of pickup. I did a lot of, like, just work at, like, local park. My local park, this was, like, Loyola Park. Like, we did a lot of just work there on our own, man. And, like, we used to look up videos on, like, YouTube and see what the that's what I kind of went to the gym and did on my own. Or I get my friends and we'll go and we'll do those drills and stuff like that. So yeah, that's kind of how that went with high school. But I think it started to change a little bit when I got to, like, my sophomore year. We kind of had some, my mom was kind of having some financial problems. I kind of had to step away from basketball to kind of help work, to put some money in, to bring some money home and help out my mom. So that kind of took a little toll on me as well.
So when you get through that rough patch and you think about your high school basketball career, what are some memories that you have? Is there something that stands out in particular as a high school player that, when you think high school basketball, there's something that pops into your head? Is that core memory?
Yeah, so, like, we had these conversations with our players, man. Like, so it's crazy how I just told you, right? 7th, 8th grade year, I had this coach who really, like, just invested in everybody, intrigued me wanted to make me, you know, get it more involved in the coaching. And then as high school kind of to go on, we had a coach. We had Coach Heff, man. He was dope. Like, he was his past, like, he recently coached, like, Division I basketball. He ended up going to coach at Lalamere Prep. This is all after his high school coaching career at Mather. So I kind of, when I got there, like, my junior year, didn't really play that much, but he was the coach. But I really didn't get a good feel of it. And then I was excited going into my senior year, man, and he ended up leaving for Lalamere Prep. His son was on the team. His son was extremely talented. They both went to Lalamere Prep. And when that kind of happened, it was like, oh, man, it was tough. So we got a new coach in. At first, me and the coach was kind of, you know, seeing eye to eye. You know, it's off season. We get an idea of what he wants to do. And as the season goes on, man, it just wasn't a great experience, man. That experience made me want to coach even more, because I wanted to make sure that I gave my players the experience that I didn't get the chance to have. I wanted them to have that experience, you know. So it's kind of crazy. That drove me to want to, you know, really coach even more after my senior year.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you're thinking about becoming a coach, and obviously you've got sort of a good example and maybe a not so good example to kind of fall back on, which, again, talking to coaches over the past few years in the podcast, that's one of the things that a lot of coaches talk about is, you know, you, whether it's somebody that you work for or whether it's somebody that you played for, you get to see the things that you really like and you say, hey, I'd like to incorporate this. And then on the other hand, you see things that you're like, I don't know if I'd do that, or maybe I'd do that differently or approach it. So I'm assuming that throughout the time when you're playing both in high school and then we're going to get to your college experience, that you had in the back of your mind, hey, I'm going to coach. So what were you doing in terms of sort of prepping to get into coaching? So were you, in other words, were you taking notes? Were you just mentally kind of filing things away? Did you have a system? How much of your thought process while you were still playing was focused on, I'm a player, but eventually I know that I wanted to get in, I want to get into coaching. So I better start kind of paying attention to what's going on around me.
Yeah. So yeah, with that, like I told you, I started coaching really like when I was like about going into that senior year, so about 16, 17, I started coaching youth basketball, man, at my local park district. So I was like the youngest guy there, and I was assisting with this other guy, and we had a really talented team. They were seventh graders. They were a really talented team. And the following year, the guy offered me the head coach position. He thought I did such a great job. Just for like, not even like knowledge wise, just like motivational wise, and you know, just the way I the relationship building with the kids, he thought I can do it. So I really didn't have any like X's and O's and knowledge and stuff like that, man. I was a great motivator talking to the kids and just got them to play hard. And I was a big team guy. I always told them like, just, you know, play together, trust each other, and you know, just do what's right. And we ended up winning like the championship for like a little youth league. That was the second year I coached that. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So as you're doing that, what was the part of it that really grabbed you that you're like, man, I just love this about coaching? I'm assuming based on what you've said to this point that it was the relationships with those kids and being able to be that role model that you felt like had such an influence on you.
For sure. That was definitely it right there, man. I think that's the beautiful thing about basketball. It's like you got all these different people, man, and you're bringing them together to try to accomplish one common goal. And along that journey, man, you learn so much about yourself. You learn a lot about the other people involved, about the coaches. And it's like it becomes so much more than just basketball. It becomes lifelong relationships. Like those eighth grade kids that I coached, like I still have a relationship with those guys to this day. Like some of them have graduated off from high school, and like they're 2 years into college right now. And, you know, some of them have started their own businesses at age 19 and 20 and 21. Like, it's just crazy, man, on like that type of what's crazy what basketball like really can do for somebody.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I've talked with lots of coaches about, and it's one of the things that when I hear somebody talk like you're talking about, just being able to have that impact and building those relationships that continue for 5, 10, 15, 30 years down the road, that the opportunity to use basketball, something that you love, to be able to have an impact on the kids, on the players that you touch every day. To me, that's, I can't think of anything that would be more rewarding is in using something that you love to be able to have an impact on other people's lives. To me, that's super powerful. And it sounds like that's kind of where you started and that's kind of where you've continued to go. And we'll get into building your culture at St. Lawrence and what you've been able to do there in a few minutes. But I get the feeling that those relationships are going to be a huge part of the theme of what we're going to talk about as we go through. When you talk a little bit about your opportunity to play for Coach Porter Moser at Loyola of Chicago.
Yeah, so that was an intriguing situation. So I started off, so let me give you a little backtrack a little bit. After high school, you know, I had some interest coming from like Roosevelt University, had an opportunity to go play there. I didn't end up taking it because of like grade situation wasn't the best. So I ended up going to Northeastern for a semester that I had. That's going to be important to remember with this story. I went to Northeastern for a semester. And at the time I enrolled full time, not knowing like all the rules and stuff like that, but I did it. And I enrolled full time and I ended up having an opportunity. They didn't have a basketball team at Northeastern. So I ended up having an opportunity to go to North Park. I met some people. They told me to come check it out. And I ended up dropping like those classes that I had at Northeastern. I enrolled in North Park immediately. So I started playing in North Park there. And I kind of jumped right in. And there, things kind of things for me was like very just blurry, man. Like I was in a not good place in my life in terms of like mentally. And I just felt like I could do more. You know, coming out of high school already, I told you the situation with my senior year didn't end as what how I wanted it to end. And I always thought like I can go play at the highest level. Like I always told myself like I can do it. Like don't ever give up on that dream. And I'm at North Park, like things just weren't working out, man. Like I wasn't getting much playing time. I just wasn't like playing well. Like when I did get the playing time, I wasn't playing well. It was a frustrating time. Sort of like midway through the season, man, I end up gathering all my film together, and at the end of the season, I end up sending it off to a bunch of schools. And it's crazy. Like Loyola hit me back one time during the summer. Flash, it was a guard that hit me up, and he had offered me to come play in an open gym at Loyola. So I'm going to these open gyms, and I'm playing there. One of these open gyms, man, and like. They were short guys. Like they needed some guys. They were just coming back from the summer. So I'm getting the opportunity to play with like Ben Richardson, Milton Doyle, you know, Montel James, you know, everybody. I'm getting this opportunity. And like I'm fitting in, man. I'm not saying like I was out there like destroying, but I was fitting in. Like I look like I belong for sure. And that made me feel good. So I end up getting invited back again. So a couple more open jams, played really well. Coach Porter actually was in the gym a few times watching. And I went to his office and I got he sat me down and he told me like, hey, look, Byron, we really like you. He was saying like, you know, we can offer you like a walk-on position. He told me like, you know, walk-ons don't really play. But he said like, you know, he was building a culture at the time. And he said like, he even said it, Porter was saying that, some special things are going to happen here at Loyola. He was like, you have an opportunity to be a part of that, you know? And when he said that, I at this time, I was really low and like at a low point. So I'm like, this is it. This is my opportunity. You know, I'm going to try to get in what I fit in. So I ended up walking on at Loyola University, man. And that opportunity that day, Coach Porter changed my life, man. The staff there was just amazing. And I learned so much, so much.
When you think about that time and the experience that you had, obviously there's you have your scholarship players, you have your walk-ons. How did the guys incorporate you into the team? Because I know that I've been around situations where walk-ons get treated really well, and then I've heard situations where unfortunately sometimes they don't. So it sounds like your experience based
was definitely
on
different.
It was definitely one where you felt like you were a part of it and that they made you feel exactly like, hey man, you're no different from everybody else out here working and playing and being a part of it.
Yeah, that's facts. Well, I give credit to him and his staff, man. They did an amazing job of treating everybody like, you know, like everybody had a part. You know what I'm saying? I took that aspect from Coach Porter, and I use it to this day. Like, it takes all 15 guys. Like, everybody has a role. Like, I even though I didn't really play much, I had a role on that team. And, you know, he got us to believe in that. And I think that's important. I think with the players, though, I think they kind of accepted me a little bit differently because of the fact that I could actually compete with those guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was out there competing, man. I wasn't out there just like, you know, I knew a lot of typical walk-ons go out there and they're the hustle hard players and all that other stuff. That stuff was great for me, but I honestly can say like I was definitely competing. I was kind of holding my own, you know, my time there, and I think that's what helped the players kind of like accept me a little bit more. Like there was times where I even had players like Milton, them, they were saying like, yeah, man, you could probably go play somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? Like you could probably yeah. go play somewhere else. Yeah. Yeah, but I think, you know, that always crossed my mind of trying to possibly leave. But I can't lie, man, that the group of guys that I met there and the staff, it was such an enjoyable time. And I got so much love for that school, that university, just the people there, man. It was the best time of my life. Changed everything for me. And we all have that same relationship to this day. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I still talk to my teammates. You know, I'm still talking to my coaches, like, you know what I mean? Like, still, you can still, like, even though Porter's at OU right now, you can still shoot him a text right now. He'll hit you right back. Like, that type of stuff, man. Like, at the end of the day, no one's remembering, like, oh, you had 25 points that game. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They remember the relationship part, the bonds, the the memories and all that stuff. So I think that's what's so important.
What do you take that is part of your coaching today from that experience at Loyola, whether it be from Coach Moser or whether it be from one of the other members of the staff? Are there one or two things that you picked up at Loyola when you were there as a player that you've incorporated into your coaching today?
Yeah, for sure. Like, we live by it every day. Like, the number one thing is you got to be a good person. I remember Coach Porter used to say that, like, daily. He used to say you got to be a good person first. You know, you got to be a good human being in society. And the number two thing is whatever you do, you got to do it every day. You know, whatever you decide to live by has to be an everyday thing. And it's like those little things you have to do every day. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are a lot of little things, and that's why I try to preach to our kids right now. Like, a lot of the little things that they don't think matter, those things are the deal breakers. Those are the things that championship teams do, you know, those little things, and it's every day.
All right, give me an example of some of those little things that you talk to your kids about.
So, for example, like cleaning up the bench after the game, you know what I'm saying? Like, or coming into a place and you see trash on the floor and you're picking it up. Little things like saying good morning when you see an adult in the hallway in the morning, you know what I'm saying? Like, just speaking to them, keeping the locker room clean. You know, it's so many little things. And then when you do those little things off the court, when you get on the court, you start doing these little things on the court, right? Like, your teammate falls down, you run over there, all four guys are helping picking that guy up. You know what I'm saying? You bring like, just clapping on the bench, giving verbals on the bench, talking while you're sitting on the bench. If you're not in the game, still being active and being involved. That's a real small thing that a lot of people are not. Like, a college coach isn't coming in the gym really and too much focused on what the bench looks like, you know what I'm saying? But that's a small detail that's so important for the team aspect, you know? So all those things are huge, but they're small things.
All right, let me ask you this, because I think this is a question that a lot of coaches wrestle with and try to figure out, and that is, how do you keep your kids who aren't getting the minutes that they want to get or maybe that they think they should get? How do you keep those kids involved and buying into the cleaning up the bench, cheering when they're not in the game? Because those are things, obviously, that any good program, you want to have that be a part of your culture. And yet I think coaches sometimes struggle with how to keep those kids who are their reserves, who aren't playing as much, struggle to keep those kids engaged and feeling like, hey, we're a 12-man team, or we're a 15-man team, as opposed to we're only an 8-man team, which is the guys that are in our rotation, and these other seven are just kind of afterthoughts. So how do you go about making sure you keep those kids involved who aren't getting as many minutes?
Yeah, I think with that, the first thing, this is like I said, like, a lot of coaches probably have their own opinions on this. What we do is, I think the first thing is transparency, man. Like, you got to be transparent with all the kids. Like, you know, it's a really tough thing to do, but you got to be as truthful and transparent as possible and let them know, like, this is the idea for everybody's role. Like, this is where everybody has to pitch in and you have to do your job. So, like, if you got guys that are not really getting in, right, like, their role might be to practice extremely hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might have to challenge our point guard on a daily basis. That might be your role. And you, by you challenging our point guard on a daily basis in practice, and he performs well in the game, like, that's credited to you. Like, great job. You're in here challenging this guy. You know what I'm saying? And eventually, like, sometimes that even leads to, like, getting extra minutes, you know, here and there. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you focus so much in on, like, let me do my best to show up to practice and challenge this guy and control what I can control, sometimes that can lead to some guys sneaking into that eighth man role and getting some minutes. But, you know, I think the transparency part is huge, man. You think you got to let kids know, like, listen, this is who's in front of you. At the end of the day, everything is earned. You got to work for it. And if this kid is just talented, more talented than you, and he's outworking you, you got to figure out a way to get yourself in. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, that comes with you trying to challenge them at practice.
Those conversations, have they gotten easier since your first time sitting in that chair as a head coach? Have you gotten better at them? What have you learned from having those transparent, brutally honest conversations with kids? Because those aren't easy.
It's not.
That's not easy to sit down in front of a kid and sort of tell them, hey, your dream of being a starter, averaging 15 points a game, there's another role that we need you to play on this particular team. And that's not easy to do. So just talk a little bit about how you've evolved or how you've approached that over your career.
Yeah, I think when I first started coaching high school, I got my first head. I was really young when I got my first head coach job. I'm still young right now, but I started my first head coaching varsity job at the high school level. I was 23 years old. So I was coaching, 17, 18 year olds. I think when I first started, it was more about trying to please everybody. I think that's what that was. So it wasn't totally being transparent. It was more about like stringing them along to try to get them to do it and tell them like, hey, it might be next game. It might be this.
Right.
Like, and it's like that. And I realized like, man, that's actually like awful. For me, it didn't sit right with me. And I just started doing, when I got in that position, I started just doing more research on certain guys. Like I'm a huge fan of like Steve Kerr. Like I love the way this guy, he runs the Golden State Warriors. And one thing he talked about was just him being transparent and just talking to guys about, being truthful. Like it hurts, but sometimes that truth is what we need, and you got to figure out how can you fit in. I think right now, like as this is my going into my sixth year now as a head coach, like I'm sitting down with guys and it's like one-on-one and I'm being transparent with you. I'm letting you know. And I ask kids, I tell them like kids that are not playing. I ask them, who do you think you should be playing over? And then you have to tell me why. You know what I'm saying? Like those are the conversations we're having now. Like who should you play over and why? You know what I mean? If you can give me a good argument or you can point out like, hey, this is my practice stats. This is my game stats. I've done this, things like that. Then I'm always, if you get to know me, I'm always willing to hear people out. I'm open.
Have you had kids? As I think when you have those conversations, I think deep down, I think most kids, and again, there are exceptions to this, but I think most kids, especially when you phrase it to them the way you just did, I think most kids deep down know and kind of understand that if they're not playing, that the guy ahead of them is better. Now their dad might not understand.
Yeah.
which is where a lot of times separate issues come into play, which we can talk about in a minute. But I think most of the time kids No. So what, when you've had those conversations with the kid of like, hey, tell me who you're better than, or tell me why you should be playing ahead of a kid. Do most of the time, does it get cut off most of the time before you have to get to that point where the kid kind of eventually in the course of the conversation, I don't know if admits is the right word, but just kind of sort of comes to the realization that, hey, there's a reason why somebody's playing ahead of me. Cause it seems like kids know. And a lot of times what they're hearing or when they're disgruntled, I think a lot of times it's coming from, unfortunately, us parents.
Yeah. I think so. We've had a few conversations with these. I think it's when the kids hear that, man, they kind of just say, I don't know. And then when they put you in that situation, I say, so like, if you don't know who you should be playing over, like, you know what I mean? What are we really having this conversation about? If you don't know, you know what I'm saying? So, yes, it's tough, but I think, the kids who really like accept that and figure out ways to get better, I think those are the ones that end up being successful, not only with basketball, but man, just in life. You know what I'm saying? Like just figuring it out.
Absolutely. Tell me something that you are better at right now than when you started. I know the answer is going to be almost everything, but let's start with maybe something that you feel like when you look back on your first year as a head coach, you were like, oh man, I was really bad at that. And now you feel like it's something that you've sort of got a handle on and really improved upon.
No, just a better understanding, like what our vision is, and what our core values are, sticking to that. So I definitely gotten better at that, and I'm real happy about that.
Who have you gone to over the course of your time as a head coach, sort of as a mentor or people that you've talked to? Is there anybody that fills that role for you? Or is there a group of guys that you talk to, or is there somebody specific that when you run into a situation, you're like, oh man, I wonder what the best way to handle this is, or I need this from an X's and O's standpoint? Do you have a guy or a group that you reach out to?
Yeah, I think it's multiple people, like you said. It's a lot of different situations come up. I like to use all my resources. I for sure hit up my coaches. Like that's if I'm in trouble, I definitely hit up my coaches. You know, B Mullins, he's over at SIU. You know, I still have some, you know, connections at Loyola with London. He's over there. And then I got Clay and those. I try not to bother Porter over at OU with these type of things, but I hit up Clay.
Right.
You know, he's working with OU as a player development coach. So, you know, I hit up these guys and they give me advice. You know, it's great. They give me some things that they do with their college players and stuff like that, which is always helpful what they do with their teams. And then I have like a group of friends, like, you know, I have two friends, you know, who are two of my buddies, good buddies. They, like, we have these debates every day, and like they really do keep it real, and they tell me like this was probably best, and you know I hear it all out, and then I end up making my decision based off of what I kind of get. And my assistant coach Jim Tracy, who's like he's probably a legend for Illinois high school basketball, man. He's my assistant. He's been coaching for 20 some plus years, and this guy, he's great to have as an assistant. He gives me a lot of advice on certain situations. So he's always there to help me. And yeah, I got a lot of good buddies I can always reach out to.
I think that's important when you start talking about being able to reach out and get a different perspective. So I think one of the things that I always say this about coaching, I think teaching is the same way. A lot of times you feel super isolated and you feel like, hey man, this is only happening to me. Like this situation is something that it's never come up ever in the history of basketball. I can't believe this is what's going on. And then you realize you talk to somebody, you're like, no, this has happened all over the place. And so to be able to have that diverse group of people that you can reach out to, I'm sure has been really valuable for you in your career. Let's go back to that first experience as a head coach. Tell me about the interview process, what you remember about it, and then just what your feeling was going into it as a guy as young as you were. What do you feel like were your strengths there as a young coach that you tried to sell as you're trying to get that first job?
Yeah, so the first actual real job, I think, was at so I ended up coaching at my alma mater. I got the Mather job. So I went back to my old high school and I got the head coaching job there. That was a really dope experience. The interview was kind of weird, man. Like it wasn't really an interview, man. Like this is when Loyola was doing the Final Four. So Loyola University was at the Final Four. So like, you know, I was going to a few games and stuff like that, going back and forth. But I happened to have been back at Mather at this time. I was doing an internship with the AD, and it turns out like he was looking for a new coach, and I was looking like, you know what, I could potentially take that role, man. And you know, at the time I think I was a hot ticket because I went to Loyola, and I think everybody was asking questions about the team, man, because those guys that played in the Final Four, those pretty much all the those my teammates. Like I had just finished literally like the year before, like that was my last year there. So So I was kind of like a little, I guess I was like a hot thing. And he was super excited about that. And he was like, we would love for you to be the head coach, like to take over. I think these guys, he said, he think the guys would really relate well with me. And he just said, like, you know, just whatever you learn at Loyola, try to bring it to these guys. So I was like, let's do it. You know, so I jumped right into it. And there was really no interview process, though. I kind of like got it on the spot, I guess.
That's the easiest interview you'll ever have.
Yeah.
Was it harder? Do you think it was harder or easier to have your first job at your alma mater?
I think it was easier. Part of the fact was the expectation at the school, man, was just so low. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so like it was really like the only way you really can go is up. And we made like the entire school culture like change, man. I did it for 2 years, and like it was so like, it was just so proudful to like just see how many kids came out to the games. Like when you think about the year before me, people were saying like no one went to the basketball games. You know, we totally redid the social media page. We got the kids new gear. Like we just made it more exciting, man. Like we had a real off season. I tried to make it as much as possible as like we had my experience at the Loyola University. I tried to make it like a college experience. We did trips. We went to team camps. We got to visit Marquette University. So like everything was like, it was fun, man. Like the process was so fun and we made such big jumps. Like we went from my first year, I think we won like 9 or 10 games to winning like 17 games, the season tie in first for the conference championship. So it was so much like this culture changing. It was like, it was amazing. Like, and I was just so like proud for to be a part of that. And it was my alma mater too. So that's what made me feel any better.
So that seems like a job that from the outside looking in, you're at your alma mater, you're getting things turned around, you're putting the kids that only 7 or 8 years ago you were sitting in the same chair that they're sitting in. That seems like a place where, man, I could be here for 30 years coaching. So over the course of your time there, what changed that made you think, hey, the opportunity to go and be the coach at St. Lawrence might be a better opportunity for me in the long term? Talk about that thought process and just what that looked like.
So Mather was great. It was good. But I think the one thing like that St. Lawrence offered was I had a little bit more ability to kind of choose what type of kids we wanted in the program. You know, when you're at a Catholic school, you know, like, you know, there's academic recruiting that you can do. Like you can go out to seek certain kids. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Go watch. With public school, it's a little bit different. Some public schools, you have to get the kids that's kind of living in the area. Like you get who you get. And that can be sometimes difficult because you don't always have a choice on like who you kind of bring in. Unless you're like some of these CPS schools, they're selective enrollment, which means they kind of select who they want in the school, which is that's kind of an advantage. But I think that's why I kind of moved on. And the league that we're in with St. Lawrence is just competitive, literally from the top to the bottom. Like, It's a well, you know, publicized league. It's very competitive all around. And it was a bigger challenge. So I definitely was looking forward to that challenge. I love competing at a really high level.
How'd the interview process compare?
Yeah, that was totally different. St. Lawrence, like, man, like that was a real interview. Like I kind of took that job in the midst of COVID, but that interview process was like real, dude. Like they had the president of the, the president of the United States on the,
that'd be good. Man. They had to get Obama sitting in there with you.
No, they had the president of the school on, man. They had some board members on there. The AD principal was on there. It was a full out meeting, man. They had me talk with some of the parents. So it was a full blown meeting and it was like multiple interviews. So, at that time, they said they had about 95 candidates that they were interviewing. So it was a real rigorous process. But I definitely was ready to go for it, though. I love a good challenge, so I was all ready to go prepared.
Is there a question that they asked you that stands out that you remember?
I think when they asked about like what is your, they told me to create a plan, like a 1 year plan, 2 year, a 3 year, then like a four to 6 year plan. I think when they started to say that, I was like, all right, this is real. You know, that stood out to me. I've never seen an interview process where they're having you put together a plan, like, and this is like a recruiting plan. Like, what do y'all, like, how are you gonna, what areas are you gonna hit? Like I don't know. I felt like, wow, all right, this is the real deal, you know, cause you know, my main goal is I want to be a head coach at the Division I level, or you know, maybe even possibly go to get to the NBA. So like when I saw this opportunity, I was like, man, this is probably the closest thing to college basketball, and I want to be in it. I want to be in it.
What were some questions or a question that you asked them? Because clearly, when you get in there, you want to be able to know and understand what the expectations are for the program, what kind of resources they're going to have available to you. So what were some things or a thing that you asked them during the process to help you to make sure that this was the right place?
Well, the first thing we're going to say is the check. No, I'm just playing.
Those basketball checks are small, man, compared to the hours you're putting in, as you well know.
No, that's facts. Yeah, that's facts. But I think the question I asked to, I think mainly was about, you know, just gym access. I'm a huge gym rat, and we preach with our kids like we want gym rat players. So like the gym access for me was like a big thing. Like I wanted to be able to say like, hey, if a kid calls me at 1 a.m. in the morning and say, Coach Bird, I want to get in the gym. It's like, all right, let's go. I'll meet you there. You know what I'm saying? So like the gym access thing was that was huge, because that's a big thing we preach in our program, is always trying to get in extra work, trying to get better. So like that was probably a big one for me.
Once you get the job, who did you talk to in the course of the first couple weeks, if you can think back to that? Obviously, I'm sure you met with the players, but did you meet with parents? Did you meet with community members? Did you meet with administration? Just what were some of those conversations like in the first week, 2 weeks on the job, just to kind of get a feel for where the program was and then trying to start to impact your vision and put that in place?
Yeah, I think most of the conversations were kind of like just a lot of history, like just giving me past stuff about like the program, what happened the year before, what happened 5-10 years ago and stuff like that. Expectations for like this year, the season coming up, because like this was around April, I think I got in. So and everything was kind of shut down. So I really didn't get to like meet the players like face to face like that. You didn't even get to see all that. So it was just really about expectation, giving me some history, and just really the school was really supportive and just saying like, hey, what is it that you guys need? Like, what is it, you know, trying to help me put a staff together. So just really just being able to see what you guys need, like what was going to help me get started.
So coming in the middle of COVID, clearly not a normal situation to walk into. So when you look back at that time and you think about what you had to do and how you had to do it because of the restrictions that were in place with COVID, what were some of the biggest challenges from that you felt like, hey, we've got to be able to overcome this to get where we want to go? And maybe, obviously, if COVID wasn't in place, you would have done it differently. But just talk a little bit about those challenges that COVID put in front of you when you first get that job.
Yeah, I think when you're a new coach coming in, right, like, you know, you kind of you're in the inherent aspect of the game, like when you kind of get what you get. I think what really hurt us was the team chemistry. Like, we didn't have that opportunity to like bond with each other. Like, we didn't, like I told you, like at Mather, we went over the offseason, we were at Marquette, we were at Michigan State's team camps. Like, we were doing so much. We were at team dinners. All that stuff got canceled out. You couldn't really do much. You know, it was the only thing you really can do was like a bunch of Zoom calls together. And, you know, it's tough to like build that type of, you know, you don't really get that real connection. I'm huge on like the team aspect part of the game. I didn't really get that connection with them because couldn't be around. Couldn't really get them everybody together. So I think the team chemistry part was huge, and just that's a huge factor.
How did you overcome that? What did you do to try to bridge that gap of not being able to get everybody together face to face? What were some of the things that you tried to do, whether through Zoom or through individual conversations with kids, in order to be able to start to build the chemistry that you were hoping to have, which obviously was much more challenging? But just how'd you go about trying to instill it despite the challenges that were in front of you?
Yeah, I think we end up doing like some, like we had to like, I wouldn't say we like bent the rules, but like we were walking right on the edge of the rules, man. Like just making sure we didn't break it, but we stayed right behind it. Just like making sure like if we could meet, do some meetings outside. Like we tried to get the kids together outside and to play at like an outside park. If we can try to get everybody together, we did stuff like that. But mainly it was a lot of Zoom calling, man. It was a lot of just staying in touch with everybody and, you know, just, you know, trying to keep their spirits high and stuff like that.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. At this point, being your second head coaching job, where were you in terms of feeling solid about your on-court philosophy? So now we're talking maybe some X's and O's in terms of how you wanted to play offensively, how you wanted to play defensively. And obviously, there's some adjustments and tweaks that you have to make year to year based on the kind of personnel that you have and who the players are on your team. But how comfortable were you at that point, and maybe even how comfortable are you right now with, hey, this is the way we want to play, and these are the things that are kind of my non-negotiables on both ends of the floor?
For sure, man. I think offensively, I definitely like to adapt to our players. I'm not a big system guy. I'm a huge like concepts teaching guys. Like, I don't like really giving them plays. I like to teach them how to play. I think that's so important, especially if kids want to go to the next level, right? Because there's different, everybody plays differently with it, depending on what school you go to. Yeah, so based off our players, I kind of go off that. Like, I like to play very fast. I like playing with a lot of guards. I like to go really fast. We like to shoot a lot of threes. I think that's the game like that we're kind of going into right now, man. Like with the way college is being played, with the way the NBA is going, you know, threes has kind of been like the hot thing, you know, right now. So, but defensively, that's the part where I get those are non-negotiables. I think defense is something where I really kind of take away a lot of the freedom of it. And it's like, this has to be done this way. Because defense, like I'm a big, big defensive guy. Like, I can sit here and talk all day about, you know, plugging gaps, switching up, not switching, like switch. Like,
tell me how you like to play. So defensively, what are some things that you like to do? What are some things you believe in?
So we like to send our guys, send the other guys, the offensive guys, to the nearest baseline. Like, we like to giving up no middle. We love to like switch up, and we play aggressively. We like to switch up aggressively. We like to pick up full court speed, a lot of teams up, make them do things they don't want to do. But just mainly keeping them out of the middle, man, and just hounding them. And I think just disrupting what a team likes to do defensively, I think that's all we're striving to do. But we're always preaching like help the helper, escaping the paint, guys getting out, being active hands. You know, just like always being active. You know, that's a huge thing on defense. I don't think a lot of kids like are so used to at a high level. Like, when I played at college, it's like every time something's coming, you have to be in that mindset that something's coming, something's about to happen. You know, you got to be extremely active. You have to be extremely, extremely communicative. You have to talk. And that's when that team chemistry comes in, that man, when everybody, all five guys are communicating. It's beautiful to watch.
How do you teach your kids to talk on defense? What's that process look like? Because we all know, look, no matter what coach you talk to, everybody wants their players to talk more. With high school kids, it's tough. It's not necessarily naturally part of every kid's personality to communicate. You think about what it looks like a good college team and how much those players are talking, and then you compare that to the average high school game, and it's just not quite at the same level. So what do you do to teach your players, first of all, just to talk at all, and then secondly, to make sure that when they're talking, they know what they're supposed to be saying to each other,
right,
when they're out there on the defensive end of the floor?
Right. So what I kind of took from Loyola, we have like a wall of culture, which is like, in our locker room right now at St. Lawrence, like, there's this wall with like all these different verbiage words that we use, and we're on the court. And like, the kids, they each offseason, they have to study these words, you know, and we plaster it all over the place. We put it in group chats. We put it on the walls. Like, we put it in their binders. You know what I'm saying? So, and the kids kind of joke around with it and use these things when they're off the court. They use these type of words like switch up, like you a ball, you man, butt to the baseline, like all these little things that gives you like little reminders. But I think the first thing you have to do is you have to emphasize that, like when we're doing our little sit downs, we're watching film, like we emphasize like how important the communication is. And when we hit the floor, we love to put our kids in disadvantage drills. Like we like to put them in 4-on-5 disadvantage drills, and our focus is on the defense. Like if you're going against five guys, you're with four guys, you're forced to talk, because if you don't, there's somebody's always going to be scoring the basketball. You know what I'm saying? So like, we like to put them in a lot of, you know, disadvantaged transition drills where you're forced to have to communicate, you know, where you're in transition, you don't have a man. So you have to talk out loud, and then you have to figure out how to get back and switch back to your man once they get into a half court set and you slow them down. So like that, putting them at disadvantage and then just emphasize on a daily basis in our meetings. We record our practices and games. Like when I get to the defensive end, like we hear it, and it's like you and film don't lie. Like we tell our kids all the time, like the film ain't lying. Like we don't hear anything. Like we got it's on the wall in the gym as well. It's on the wall in the locker room as well. Like the loudest gyms are the best gyms. Right? So like you gotta be extremely loud and just emphasizing it.
Yeah, I think putting that focus and making sure that it's something that you make a part of what you do every single day is critical. And I always like to use the word intentional. You have to be intentional about that communication piece, because it's easy. It's something that if you're not intentional about it, even though you want your kids to be doing it, if you don't emphasize it, if you're not bringing it to the forefront every single day, that's something that I've found in my experience is easy. It's easy for that to slip away, because you can start focusing on the fundamentals and the movement, and the positioning and how we're going to do this and schemes. And then it's easy to get away from that communication piece if you're not continually making sure you remind kids of, hey, you got to be talking. Yeah. And what am I supposed to be saying? What does good communication look like? Because a lot of times as coaches, you know, we'll say, you'll be at an AAU tournament, you'll be, hey, we got to talk more on defense.
But what do I say?
Right. And you wonder, like, and again, I don't expect a coach on the sideline to be saying, okay, you should be saying this, but you know that during practice, that's something that you have to really talk about and teach is, hey, what is it that I want to say? How do I communicate that there's a screen coming? How do I communicate that we're going to switch? How do I communicate that I'm here in help side? And how do I communicate, am I helping from the right or the left? Like all those things are such small little details. Yeah, it's all small little details.
Yeah, it's really, really important.
I think it's critical. I think if you're not communicating, I think so many good things that teams do can be erased if you're not communicating. And to be able to do that, as you said, to emphasize, I think that's key. So let's take that a step further. When you are putting together a practice plan, what does that process look like for you in terms of when are you putting together a practice plan? Let's say it's preseason. When are you putting together that practice plan? What do you make sure that you include in it? Are you talking to your assistants during the process? Are you sharing it with them after the process and getting their feedback? Are you looking at the previous day's practice film to figure out what do we need to work on? Just how do you go through and put together your practice plan on a daily basis?
Yeah, so definitely I would say like I'm looking at film to see like what's killing us. Like what's some things that like we're just not getting and we gotta work on. So I make sure we add those things in. But like you said, I think it depends on the time of the season, right? Like if you got off season stuff, I think the practice plan, more like when we get our little live days in June, I think our main focus right there is just about individual, you know, skill work and then implementing some new things that we want to do offensively or defensively. So the practice plan is pretty set straightforward with that. I think on a daily basis, you probably want to make sure that you're doing rebounding, transition defense, and just your half court defensive stuff. I think you want to make sure those are in your practice every day. Like those are like the daily things that have to happen. And we also include our individual work in our daily thing like that. In the season, it kind of changes more to like 30 minutes compared to our off season, which is a little bit longer, maybe 45 to 50 minutes our individual work is, and in season drops about 30. But our assistant coaches, like I usually send it out to them and say like, hey, anything that you guys want to add in or maybe take out, you know, like just send it to me and we can make that change. one thing that I know I got to get better at. I try to put a lot of people around me who are organized, because sometimes I get off on a tangent. Like, I'll be in practice and I'll have like a spur of the moment impulse, and I'll be like, you know what, let's do this. And I'll kind of get off the practice plan and stuff like that. So my assistants, they do a good job of trying to keep me organized on following what the practice plan is. But sometimes I get so excited, man, and I just say, I got something better that just popped in my head that we can do that can be more beneficial.
Do you share that plan with the players before practice?
I don't share it with the players. We typically just go right in, and we do our film session before we usually do our practice and stuff like that. And we always write in our practice plan, like, emphasis on the day. And we kind of usually go over that. And we have, like, at the bottom, like, thoughts of the day. We typically go over that type of stuff. So they kind of get a hint of, like, where we're going. Like, if we're pissed, they get a hint from those emphasis, because we really emphasize what we're about to do. And they know, like, all right, we know what type of practice is going to be with coach. And then they get a hint when they know what type of, it's going to be like one of those, skillful practice.
Absolutely. Yeah, understood. That makes a ton of sense. How much of that practice film, you mentioned film and practice, what's your process like for going back, looking at that film? What are you looking specifically for? Just talk a little bit about how you use the practice film.
Yeah, practice film, we use that. I use that to break down them individually as well. Like, those are the opportunities where we can say, like, hey, like, this is where your positioning needs to be fixed at. You know what I'm saying? Like, here's where we feel like you wasn't really communicating. Like, it's a lot of individual stuff you're really focused on. And then you look at, like, the team defense, and you can watch over that as a group and say, like, here's the mistakes that we're making here in practice. Let's try to, like, get it fixed for the next practice. So, like, that practice film is huge, man, because you're basically just cleaning up a lot of mistakes before you actually have to watch, like, real game film. You're just cleaning up a lot of that little stuff. Slippage. The film is huge, though. I do want to put in, like, film is huge. We watch so much film. Like, we watch a lot.
How much do you watch of an opponent when you're getting ready for an opponent? How much do you, as the head coach, watch?
I watch a lot. I usually watch about 4 to 5 games, and I like to do research on the coach. I like to go watch the coach at his, like, if I don't really know, like, the school, like I got to the Catholic League, I was kind of new. So I had to watch, like, some of these other coaches, and some other coaches, they're just coming from other schools. So I had to go back and watch what did they do when they were at this specific school and stuff like that. So I love watching film. I love watching the high school basketball players play. So it's really not a big deal to me. I'm watching a ton of it, man. And I'm like, I got coaches right now. I was requesting film, like, in September and August, and they were like, yeah, some coaches are writing back a little early right now. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm just like watching it just to see, but I think in terms of, like, I like we watch a lot, like, with the players, we watch a lot of film, but we tend not to really try to, like, it depends on the year. Like, last year, we were more watching more of ourselves than other guys. Cause I feel like if you got to fix what's going on with your guys first before you trying to go and stop someone else. Like, we got to fix us. So I think that was a totally different year last year compared to what's about to happen this year.
Yeah, that's a big balance. I think that a lot of times different teams need different amounts of film or are capable of handling different amounts of film. Right? There's some players, some teams that they just eat that up, and you can give them a ton and they can process it and they can utilize it and it's beneficial. And then there's other teams where, man, you can show them as much film as you want and it's flying right over their head and they're just going to go out and play and do what they do. And sometimes that's enough, just because, again, every team is different. Every player is different. And so they all have different needs when it comes to how much film they want to consume and how much they can consume.
Right.
When you're watching as the head coach, what are some of the key things that you try to pick out when you're watching an opponent? What are things that you're looking for that you really feel can help you to gain an advantage over an opponent?
I like to look at, like, first off, like, what do they like to do defensively? Like, are they switching? Do they play zone? Are they staying with their guy? Then I typically look at, like, percentages of, like, what they're giving up. Like, are they willing to give up a lot of threes? Like, some schools, like, their biggest thing is, like, we're giving up a contested three. Are they giving up a lot of layups? What's their transition defense looking like? Can we beat them in transition? Can we go really fast without allowing them to set up? So we're looking at a ton of things, man. And then we're looking at, like, I like to look at, like, when it comes down to teams offensively, like, who's their guy? Is there a guy that's just like every play is going through him? You know what I mean? Because, you know, high school basketball is typically, you know, you typically get about one or two guys on the team that's like just dominating. Like, if you can shut those two guys down, then you can shut down one of those guys, then you have a pretty good chance of winning.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a lot of things. Or, like, I even had a conversation with, that's a good question to talk about too, with mentors, like Mike Ellis. He's the head coach at Evanston Township. He's one of probably the best coaches in the state right now. He had a great theory. I was talking to him on the phone, and I was asking him a question. I was at Mather. I was like, we're going against this one kid. He scores like 40 points a game, man. He's really amazing. I was saying, like, what do you advise think I should do? And he was like, sometimes you can allow that kid to get his 35 points and shut down everyone else around him. Right. So that way, like, all you have to do is outscore that kid. You score 45 points and he has 30. You're probably going to win the game. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yep. He has some, it was like, you know, you can, it's so many different things that you could kind of do, like, you know, when you're looking at a team, but I definitely like to look at them, like, to see who's the guy.
Yeah. Having an understanding of who the main players are on a team, I think, and what those main players like to do, I think that's a huge advantage. I know I've talked to a lot of coaches who feel like in those situations, sometimes you can mix in and throw in a junk defense, which a lot of times teams just aren't prepared for necessarily. So maybe you can steal a couple of possessions. You right. Come out and throw a box and one at somebody for three or four possessions. And if you can get a little, again, that proverbial 6-0 run, right, where you put together enough 6-0 runs in a game, and that's going to lead you to be able to win games. And so if you can squeeze one of those out with some kind of junk defense that throws a team off their rhythm, I think there's something to be said for that. When you're looking at that game prep piece of it, and you're trying to get your team ready, and let's talk about, like, day of the game, right before the game. What's your thoughts about day of the game, shoot arounds, walkthroughs, and then just what's your pregame prep actually in the gym as you guys are getting ready? Pre-game talk, just talk a little bit about sort of the lead up to game day.
Really, most of the time it's usually like team, it's like a pre-game meal. We like to do that, like, you know, that's what we got to do in college, which is kind of cool. You get there pretty early, do a pre-game meal, kids get to kind of sit around, talk with each other, you know, get to loosen up a little bit, joke around a little bit, and it's a good team bonding experience. And then you kind of give them a little break to kind of sit around, let that food digest. And we go into, you go into like a walkthrough. Walkthrough is kind of where we like go through like what sets we're running this game. What defense, what are they giving up? You know what I mean? Like, these are the looks that we should be looking for. You know, here's some of the actions that we ran last game that they probably scouted, and we're going to hit them with these adjustments. So all that stuff is probably leading up to it. And then we allow the kids to, like, go get in their zone, you know what I mean? Before, like, a couple, like, 2 hours before the game, we allow them to get in their zone. Every kid is different, right? You always got those group of kids, I think, on a team that they have their way of getting ready for the game. You have those kids that like to joke around, you know, like, they like to have a lot of fun before the game. That's what loosens them up. You have those serious guys who put their headphones in and they sit in the locker and they just put their sweater over their head and no one talks to them. You have those guys that just go off by themselves somewhere. So, you allow them to do what works for them. And then, you get them back in the locker room. And I think we're big on energy. So, like, before we leave out of the locker room, like, I always try to look up, like, really cool, like, speeches. And try to, like, steal, like, some motivational speeches and, just giving them that energy when they go out there, man. Game day is always fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a coach, obviously, you get a lot of joy from practice and being able to put in the work on the practice floor. But then that game is the reward. It's certainly a reward for the kids and then for you as a coach to be able to bring that excitement and have that type of enthusiasm and get the kids ready to play, get them motivated to get out there and play the game, which is obviously why everybody's there, is to be able to get a chance to compete and measure yourself against your opponent. Talk a little bit about what you've done there at St. Lawrence. I know we've kind of touched on it here and there, but let's kind of put it together as a whole package in order to build the kind of culture that you want to have. Let's break it down and maybe give three keys, three things that you think have been most important to you being able to build the type of culture that you have built and want to continue to sustain there at St. Lawrence.
Yeah, for sure. The first thing, man, is about who you're bringing into the program. You know, with the players and the coaches, I think that's huge. You got to get guys that believe in what you believe in, like whatever our core values are. Like, they got to match that. So who you bring in is huge. And I think right now, man, we have some, like, the players that we have in right now, they are the most unselfish, talented kids I have ever seen, man. It's beautiful basketball to watch. Like, they are, like, we literally just had a little meeting today, and the some of the answers that these kids are saying, it's like, it's blowing me away on how unselfish they are. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we got people asking these kids, you know, how many points do you want to average? We got kids in the locker room talking about, like, that's not what we're thinking about, how many points we're averaging. We're going to do whatever we need to do to, like, win the game. You know, whatever how many points it takes for me to win a game, if that's me scoring 1 point and having 10 rebounds or me scoring 15, like, that's the type of answer we're getting. And it's so, like, amazing to see, man. I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the second thing I would definitely say is the emphasis on, like, the team chemistry, right? So after you get those guys in, like, the building the team chemistry and being a good person and, like, finding that joy, that's got to be there. Like, that's the whole part of, like, building our culture. Like, you got to be a good person. You got to make sure that it's team first. And you got to be enjoying this, man. You got to enjoy the process. You got to have fun with it. If there's no joy while you're playing, then I don't know. I really don't know how successful you're really going to be. It's got to be some joy. And then the last thing I think in terms of building our culture is definitely taking care of our mental. We started to put more time on just talking about our mental focus and, you know, how to handle pressure, you know, how to handle expectation, how to handle losing and all this other stuff, how to handle things that's here in the conversation between your parents, the media, all this other stuff, social media. So, like, you know, that's been a big part of our culture is focusing more on mental.
Okay, I got two questions. I'm hoping I can remember both of them. So the first one is, when you're talking about the mental side of it, how do you go about instituting that with the kids? In other words, are you talking about that daily on the practice floor just as sort of that teachable moment where something comes up and it gives you an opportunity to talk about something in terms of what you need to do? Or is that more done formally? I'm guessing it's probably a combination of both.
We got something now where, like, on Wednesdays, like, we have, like, dedicated mental days, and we're going to continue this throughout the practices, like, where it's like, you know, it's personal, like, growth. Like, you're focusing on how can I grow as an individual mentally. So we do those for Wednesdays, and, man, the kids are just, like, they're loving it. Like, I'm starting to love mental Wednesdays. Like, they're so, like, they're active, they're participating, they're coming up with great scenarios. Like, we're talking about a lot of things that they do, that they have to go through throughout a game, the pressures of it, you know, like, expectations from coaches and stuff like that. So, like, we meet on it weekly, and we open it up for the players to kind of talk about it, tell us how they're feeling. And there's, like, a no repercussion thing we do with them. Like, they're free to say whatever they want to say. Like, if they feel like a coach is, you know, like, been picking on them, like, they open up and they say it. And it's like, it's dope, man. Like, and I told you, like, the transparency part for me is huge. Like, I've learned that.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, we're all on the same page now. You know what I'm saying? So there's daily reminders too, that the kids are getting too, like, right. Like, you know, they're all, when we get on the court, we're always making sure we emphasize kids focusing, because, you know, the beginning stages of practice, especially in November, they're kind of boring because it's a lot of talking. It's a lot of, like, right. It's not really fast paced when you first get started. So the mental focus got to be there.
How do you build that trust? This isn't my second question, but it's a follow up to this point. How do you build that trust with your players where, because look, I know I've been on teams and you've probably been on teams where players aren't going to say what they really think to their coaching staff because there isn't that trust, that there isn't going to be repercussions, as you said. So what have you done? Because that doesn't happen by accident. It's not like you just throw your team in a room and be like, all right, guys, start throwing criticism at us. It doesn't work that way. The players have to trust that they can share those things with you the same way you've shared things with them. So what do you think has been the key for you to build the kind of trust that you need in order to get the kids to open up and share some of those things that ultimately benefits everybody in the program?
Yeah, I think it starts, like I said, like it starts with the kids you bring in, right? Like we have our recruiting process is like, we got a list of things. Like if a kid is not this, then we're probably not talking to them. So like we make sure that we're finding these kids who are first joyful and able to open up, speak their minds. Like we like a lot of kids like that. But building that relationship while you're recruiting them, man, is huge. Like, you know, just shooting them a text every day, talking to them, checking in on them. And it's not about basketball. Like it's about like, how was school today? You know, stuff like that. Like what's your other interests? Like finding out what other things guys want to do besides basketball. Like all that stuff is like, and it's some of it is built in the off season too, right? Like you're spending this time with all of these, you're spending this time with the kids and you're going out to all of these dinners and you're watching all these basketball games and, you know, you built that relationship with them. And I think that trust comes in through that part, which is huge, man. You need that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that happens by accident. That's something that is built over time by, as you said, spending time with the kids and then also getting to know them as people and not just as basketball players, right? And understanding, helping them to understand that you care about them, not just as an athlete and what they can produce on the basketball court, but also about who they are as a person and what they are as a student. And those things go a long way towards getting kids to trust you so that they'll open up and share things that ultimately are going to benefit, as I said, everybody in the entire program. It just, it goes without saying. And yet at the same time, I think that's something that it's not easy to do. It takes a huge investment in time and it takes a lot of work to try to build up that trust. We know that it doesn't happen overnight. It's not easy to do. So the fact that you're able to get to that point with your kids, I think is a testament to what you've been able to build and what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
The other thing that you mentioned was the idea that what you're doing has to be fun. And I think this is another spot where sometimes coaches struggle or go back and forth with, look, I want my kids to have fun and I want them to have it be a great experience, but yet there also has to be the discipline piece and the piece that there's things that we have to get done. There's things that are not going to be necessarily what everybody would consider to be fun. There's hard work that has to be done.
Right.
So how do you balance setting high expectations and being demanding of your players, and yet at the same time making sure that when a practice ends or when a season ends or when a game's over, that the kids still look back on it and be like, hey man, Coach had really high expectations of us. He pushed us. He demanded things from us. But yet, man, that was still fun. How do you do that? Or what does that look like in your mind when you're thinking about that?
The fun of like competing, you know, against each other. Like that's fun. You know what I'm saying? It's fun. It's fun knowing that you're getting better. Like it's fun seeing like progress from you, like from this week to next week. Like we that's the type of things we talk about fun with those guys. It's like you seeing progress. You see development. You know what I'm saying? Like you're seeing this growth, you know, mentally, physically, that's fun. You know what I'm saying? It's fun when you got Division I coaches at your open gym watching you. That's fun. You know what I'm saying? It's it's fun when you got Division I coaches giving you a call, talking to you about, you know, how they would like to see you at their school. Like, you know what I mean? That's the fun part. It's fun seeing seeing all those fans at your school that come out and get in the student section and you win the basketball game. Like that's the fun part we're talking about. And I think we tell them, like, you have to put in that work if you want those things. Like, that's the reward. Like, the work is the thing you have to put in, and then the outcome is going to be this stuff.
Yeah, I always like to say it's fun to be good.
Yeah, right? There you go. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's pretty simple, but, you know, you can't be good if you don't put in the work. And that process isn't always, quote unquote, fun, but yet at the same time, when you look at the totality of what you're doing and what the results are, that's where the fun comes. Look, it's a lot more fun to win games than it is to lose games.
That's facts.
We can talk about all these other culture piece and this and that and whatever, But anybody who's competitive knows that those things are critically important, but yet it's a lot easier to have all those things go well when you can combine that with winning games. And I think all the things that we've already talked about in terms of the culture, that leads to winning games. I think sometimes there's there's a disconnect and people say, well, all that stuff, it's just that's soft skills. And those are things that like we got to just be on the practice floor grinding away and this and that. But I think all the things that you've talked about in terms of building trust and building a culture and making sure that your guys are good people, like that contributes to winning.
Yeah.
And sometimes that line is maybe hard to see. There's not as direct of a line from that as there is to, hey, we're a better rebounding team, so that leads to more wins. Like that's a more direct line. But I think the other things have a huge impact. But let's face it, everybody wants to win games.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that too about like the winning aspect of it. But the part that I've kind of seen right now is when you talk about building culture, man, I think a lot of people, they don't talk about the adversity that you go through at first. You know what I'm saying? Like you look at Loyola University with Porter, like people don't know when he first got there, like Loyola was at its lowest point. You know what I'm saying? Like it was a lot of adverse situations like previous players had to go through before like they just went to that Final Four. There was players that came before those guys that did things that they were in tough situations, weren't winning, but they stuck it out. Like I think a lot of people like they don't want to go through that challenging part. But like they don't understand, like you really got to enjoy that process, man. Like that's a process you embrace. Like I embrace this. I like right now, like this is these past 2 years that the first year I had at St. Lawrence was the COVID year. We only played like 12 games, but we did pretty good. Then this past season we just had, it wasn't a good season. We ended off on a positive note, but wasn't a good season. But and I don't think we basically started four freshmen. We have four freshmen starting on varsity. And like, I don't think like people see like the adversity that our kids went through. And it's like, but that stuff is going to come back when we win a championship, when we go downstate, we can look back and say like those situations made us, you know? And
yeah,
that's what that building culture means. I think people want it to be instant. But it don't work like that, man. Everybody just wants you to walk in winning, but it don't work like that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. In order to be able to build the trust and put together a team that is going to be able to compete and compete at a high level and compete against other really good opponents, you have to be able to look to the side and trust the guy that you're playing next to, that if you get beat, he's going to be there to help you, that if you're having an off game, somebody else is going to pick you up. If you look to the bench, your teammate's going to be cheering you on and trying to pick you up and knowing that guys are there for you. Like that just doesn't happen by accident. I mean, you could take it to the highest level of the game, right? You talk about these NBA super teams and guys come together and that just doesn't happen. Even when you're talking about the best players in the world, they got to build trust with each other and they've got to figure out a way to make sure that they're all on the same page. And that's just like, you don't just walk into training camp one day just because you got you know, two or three all NBA guys. It doesn't work that way. Like there's so much more, as you know, that goes into building a cohesive team that's going to trust each other in big moments. I think you make a great point that's a process. It's not something that happens where, okay, I just come in and I wave a magic wand because I've built a culture somewhere else, or this kid was playing on a good team before. Like we have to all go in and build that together, and we have to kind of go through the fire in order to get to that other side to be able to have the success like you were describing. I think that's a great way to describe it.
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about parents in your program, because I think any high school coach, if you talk to them, one of the things that inevitably is part of that conversation is, how do I try to engage the parents in my program to get them to be supportive parents who are positive, as opposed to parents who are in the stands grumbling about the coach and grumbling about this and that and what offense we're running, my kid's not playing and all that kind of stuff. So what are some things that you do there at St. Lawrence to make sure that you get your parents engaged, get them quote unquote on your side and supportive of your program?
Yeah, I love our parents. We got some really cool parents. All of our parents are all pretty much involved.
I like to have a conversation with our parents. I like to talk to them, especially during like the off season times. I'm really involved with like our, you know, with our kids who play on my AAU, they play for my AAU program.
I don't coach them, but I usually go check them out and watch them. But like, I'm always going at the games. And I like to sit with the parents. I like to talk and hear like some of their inputs and, you know, how they feel and stuff like that. Like I'm a, like I told you from the beginning, like I'm a really open guy. Like I like to hear out, you know, scenarios and I love to hear it out. But just like we built relationship with our parents in terms of like, we were recruiting them. So like, I kind of give them what exactly like we're about to give to your kid. And like, if you accept it right then and there, then it's like, ain't nothing changed. Like I stay fluent on what I told I was going to offer, you know, from the get go, like nothing changes. It's all opportunity based with us, but, we got, our parents have been pretty cool, man. They trust the staff, they trust us, and they allow us to do our jobs pretty well. And hasn't been too much from them. But I do enjoy talking with them.
I think when you get out and you have those conversations and you do it early and you're proactive and you're talking to them while it's positive, it's the same thing as a teacher, right? If you can have those conversations with parents, say something good about their kid or talk to them about something positive that happened. Then if there is a case where you have to have a more difficult conversation, those conversations become easier. I think that proactive communication is really important. Let's shift gears to AAU. Tell me a little bit about your AAU program, how you got it started, and just where you guys are at in terms of what you do with the AAU.
Yeah, so Chicago Hoops, we kind of got started. It's kind of crazy, man. The idea was pitched to me in college. I don't think I violated any NCAA rules though with this, because I didn't create the program at the time. It wasn't under my name. I gave it to one of my friends. It was his, I gave him the idea of it. Cause some of my teammates was kind of joking around saying like, man, you should coach. Like they was like, you should coach. Like you should get an AAU program. Some of my teammates, cause at Loyola, we would have like media days and kids all around the neighborhood would come in and they would want to get autographs on the papers. And I pretty much knew all the kids because I grew up in Rogers Park, you know, so that Loyola University is right in Rogers Park. So everybody knew me from the area. So we always had support from that. And I took it serious and I brought it to some of my friends and they created Chicago Hoops, man. And yeah, I mean, it's been kind of cool to kind of sit back and watch how it all works. And the AAU circuit is wild. I'm sure you're going to have some questions that'll get me going on that. But it's been AAU is a gift and a curse, I can say.
All right, so let's talk about each side of that. What about it is a gift?
I think it allows kids to I think it puts kids in a position to maximize their exposure, expose their game, you know, at a high level, their individual skill. I'm starting to see a lot of AAU teams kind of steer away from like team ball. Like it's totally different from high school basketball. Like even when I talk to some of these Division I coaches, like they tell me like, yeah, AAU is like, some of them don't even like watching it, but they got to go watch this kid because, you know, this is the kid they kind of want in their program. But the team aspect of it doesn't always translate.
I think the big thing for me, and I've kind of got to experience this, my son is going to be a high school junior, or is a high school junior, he's going into his junior season. And I think what I found is that for his younger years, like I ended up being his AAU coach, so I could kind of control the environment, make sure that he was getting good coaching. And then slowly as he improved, and last year we decided we probably needed to get him off dad's team and find him a better team, you know, to be able to play on, find some better teammates to play with. And we were able to do that. And we ended up with a program and a coach that just did a tremendous job. And we had 10 kids on the team. And as you were describing your high school players and talking about how they're like, man, I don't care how many points I average, we just want to win games. And that's kind of how this AAU team for my son ended up breaking down, was you just had 10 kids who were really talented and they all shared the ball and they played so hard for each other. It was a joy to watch. I tell people, and I think this is probably the biggest endorsement I can give of our coach and our team, was most of the time, you know, as a parent, you're sitting in the stands and if your kid's not in the game, you're kind of a little down. You're like, oh, how come they're not in there? They should be in there. And I'm sitting there in this AAU game and I'd be sitting there and I enjoyed watching our team play so much because they just played so hard and they were so unselfish that even when my son was out of the game, like honestly, I was like, I don't even care. Like these guys are just so much fun to watch.
Yeah, there's a lot of programs out there like that do it like that. Those are great programs.
Yep. And I mean, it makes such a difference. And I think the point that the greater point that you're trying to make in terms of the curses, right, is that there's a lot of people that are doing it right. And then unfortunately, because AAU has now become just so widespread that basically anybody and everybody is playing AAU basketball. And so you just have room in the space now for people who don't have the best interest of the kids at heart. And they're, as you said, putting kids in positions that don't allow them to maximize what that experience can be. And I think that's where you get into the danger. I think AAU done correctly,
it's great,
can be a fantastic, fantastic opportunity for kids. But yet at the same time, I've been in lots of situations. I've seen lots of situations. I've been to tournaments where you're just looking around and you see whether it's the coaching or whether it's the organization or whether it's the fact that here's a team that has 12 kids and they're traveling across the country and guy 12 gets 1 minute and they just, their parents just spent, you know, $1,200 to go stay at a hotel. Like those are the kinds of things that you're just like, man, it's just, you wish you could get people to be better educated about what AAU basketball could be or should be all about, because there are, as you said, there's so many programs that do it well that it's just a shame that sometimes kids don't get the opportunity to work with those programs.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, it's going through, and like I said, this is the first year that my son with this team that, you know, we got the chance to travel and go and play in some bigger tournaments and play against really good competition. And I have to say it was a lot of fun, both from my son's point of view, the entire team, and then me as a parent getting to tag along and go and watch and experience that. And just, obviously I'm a hoops guy, so just sitting and watching games and being able to walk around and see kids play and that kind of stuff was a lot of fun. But by the same token, we did that going into his junior year. I'm not so sure that would have been worth my money when he was in fifth, sixth, seventh grade, which a lot of people are doing it that those younger ages. And I don't know, to me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm not sure you're fine. I'm not sure your fifth grader or your sixth grader needs to travel out of town to find great competition.
Yeah, we're not doing it. Like you just said, the environment of the AAU stuff sometimes is really cool, man. Like you
got to get educated out of this to make sure they're putting themselves in the right position to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we are coming up on an hour and a half, so I want to ask you one final two-part question. First part, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then number two, what's your biggest joy when you think about what you get to do every single day? So your biggest challenge and your biggest joy.
Yeah, I think, let me see, biggest challenge right now, I think the biggest challenge, you know, that's a really good question. I think the biggest challenge really, man, is just staying consistent with that. Like, you want to be competitive consistently. I think that's a challenge because, you know, like, the recruiting process is just so gruesome. Like it's constant trying to find the right match, trying to make sure kids are put in the best position to be successful. You know what I'm saying? Like, as you know, like, kids are transferring, man. Right, like, you know, it's all trickling down, like the NBA, all that stuff, all the movement and stuff that's going on. College guys are now, you know, transferring, who's giving the most money at NIL deals and all that. It's trickling down to the high school. They got something on the internet called like a high school transfer portal, a tracker.
Yep.
And it's like they got one for Illinois basketball. I'm like, wow, like it is like, so kids are transferring a lot. So it's just about how can we, you know, keep our guys together. You know, how can we continue to keep going and just be competitive on a consistent basis? I think that's the challenge. I'm looking forward to it, but it's definitely going to be a challenge. And what was the second question you said?
Your biggest joy.
Biggest joy for me, man, I think honestly the biggest joy for me is just being able to be around my players every day. Like, I get to see my guys every day. We have the best kids, I think, in the world. These guys are... They're just a joy to be around. They work extremely hard. You know, they have great personalities. I just love being around them. And I'm really blessed to be able to do what I'm doing, especially at my age. And I love my job so much. I love the group of people I get to be around, the coaches. I love my school. So like that, but yeah, definitely the biggest joy. Just being able to show up to see those guys' faces, see them in the hallway, always giving fist bumps. They always smile when I see them. So it's like, the kids is definitely why I wake up in the morning and do what I do.
The great answer is well said, Byron. Before we get out, I want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you and your program. You want to share social media, website, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, for sure. They can all, if you guys have anybody interested, they can always go to STL Vikings Hoops on Twitter. And that's our Instagram page, too, STL Vikings Hoops. We do a really good job on our media. We try to make it real close for people who are following us. And I'm really looking forward to this season. It should be a really, really exciting season.
Perfect. Byron, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.